Okay, so we're reading quite a few verses from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. We'll chant together the verse number 8 from the 12th chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Expansions of Advaita Acharya. We'll chant first this verse and then we'll go through the translation. So I will read the translation of the verses, which previous verses, starting from the 11th chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, verse number 16. I have briefly described only some of the followers and devotees of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. Even the thousand-mouthed Sheshanag cannot describe all of these unlimited devotees. And the last verse of the chapter. With an ardent desire to serve the purpose of Sri Rupa and Raghunatha, I, Krishnadasa, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. And then now we start with the 12th chapter, which is called The Expansions of Advaita Acharya and Gadadhara Pandit. The followers of Sri Advaita Prabhu were of two kinds. Some were real followers and the others were false. Rejecting the false followers, I offer my respectful obeisances to the real followers of Sri Advaita Acharya, whose life and soul were Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all glories to Lord Nityananda, all glories to Sri Advaita Prabhu. All of them are glorious. I offer my respectful obeisances to the all-glorious Advaita Prabhu, who forms the second branch of the eternal Chaitanya tree, and to his followers who form his sub-branches. Sri Advaita Prabhu was the second big branch of the tree. There are many sub-branches, but it is impossible to mention them all. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also the gardener, and as he poured the water of his mercy upon the tree, all the branches and sub-branches grew day after day. The fruits of love of Godhead that grew on those branches of the Chaitanya's tree were so large that they flooded the entire world with love of Krishna. As the trunk and branches were watered, the branches and sub-branches spread lavishly, and the tree grew full with fruits and flowers. And now we read this verse and purport by Srila Prabhupada. At first, all the followers of Advaita Acharya shared a single opinion, but later they followed two different opinions as ordained by Providence. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki. The words Daivara Karan indicate that by dint of providence or by God's will, the followers of Advaita Acharya divided into two parties. Such disagreement among the disciples of one Acharya is also found among the members of the Gaudiya Math. In the beginning, during the presence of Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotara Shata Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura Prabhupada, all the disciples worked in agreement. But just after his disappearance, they disagreed. One party strictly followed the instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura, but another group created their own concoction about executing his desires. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, at the time of his departure, requested all his disciples to form the governing body and conduct missionary activities cooperatively. He did not instruct a particular man to become the next Acharya. But just after his passing away, his leading secretaries made plans without authority to occupy the post of Acharya. And they split into two factions over the next Acharya, over who the next acharya would be. Consequently, both factions were asara, or useless, because they had no authority, having disobeyed the order of the spiritual master. Despite the spiritual master's order to form a governing body and execute the missionary activities of the Gaudiya Math, the two unauthorized factions began litigation that is still going on after 40 years with no decision. Therefore, we do not belong to any faction. But because the two parties busy dividing the material assets of the Gaudiya Math institution stopped the preaching work, we took up the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur to preach the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world under the protection of all predecessor acharyas, and we find that our humble attempt has been successful. We followed the principles especially explained by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita verse Vyavasayatmika Buddhir Ekeha Kurunandana. According to this instruction of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, it is the duty of a disciple to follow strictly the orders of his spiritual master. The secret of success in advancement in spiritual life is the firm faith of the disciple in the orders of his spiritual master. The Vedas confirm this. Yasya deve parabhaktir, yatha deve tatha guru, tasya ite kathita yartha prakashante mahatmanaha. To one who has staunch faith in the words of the spiritual master and the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the secret of success in Vedic knowledge is revealed. The Krishna consciousness movement is being propagated according to this principle, and therefore our preaching work is going on successfully in spite of many impediments offered by antagonistic demons, because we are getting positive help from our previous acharyas. One must judge every action by its result. The members of the self-appointed acharya's party who occupied the property of the Gaudiya Matha are satisfied, but they could make no progress in preaching. Therefore, by the result of their actions, one should know that they are asara, or useless. Whereas the success of the ISKCON party, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which strictly follows Guru and Gauranga, is increasing daily all over the world. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to print as many books as possible and distribute them all over the world. We have tried our best in this connection, and we are getting results beyond our expectations. Srila Prabhupada ki. Prathameta eka mata charyera gan pachidui mata hoila daivera karan. At first, all the followers of Advaita Acharya shared a single opinion, but later they followed two different opinions, as ordained by Providence. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakha Vitamsya He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Ajano Lambita Bujo, Kanakavadata Sankirtanai Kapitaro Kamalai Daksha, Vishwambaro Dvijavaro Yugadharma Pala Vandei Jagat Priyakaro Karunavataro, Yantah pravishya mama vachyam imam prasuptam sanjeevayata kila shakti darak svadhamna anyam shahasta charana sravana tvagadim prananamo bhagavate purushaya tubhyam. Hare Krishna. So we're reading this very instructive story from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita about the schism of the followers of Sri Advaita Acharya. And basically that's the fate of all religious movements. It usually starts as one. But then as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, there are branches and sub-branches of the main tree, which grows. It's a natural process, and therefore there will be branches and sub-branches. But then there are some deviant groups inevitably appear, and all the religious movements know this dynamic. It starts as one and it grows, but then at one point it splits, and sometimes the split is very drastic and very, you know, even a lot of bloodshed is going on during the split. Sometimes it's more peaceful. But here Prabhupada teaches us how to relate to these events, which is very important for us. We're also witnessing similar processes in our movement, to one extent or another, and it's very important to understand this dynamic, the reasons behind this dynamic, and our attitude towards this dynamic, and how we should keep ourselves loyal to the original intention of the Acharya. Because specifically it is said here, originally, Prathame, there was only Ekamata, only one opinion. But then, all of a sudden, two opinions appear. So, how do we know which opinion is right and which opinion is wrong? Which opinion we should follow? Because this, splitting will be there. Always there will be from one opinion, two opinions, and then four opinions, and then 10,000 opinions will be there. So, what to do? How to relate to these events, how to make sure that we are following the original intent, because the very word mata means intent, intention. The original idea which is invested by the founder into particular movement or group, and how to remain loyal to this. And Prabhupada gives us some hints in this purport and many other purports to this very instructive story. And the very important word in this verse is actually Daivara Karan. Srila Prabhupada starts his purport by explaining this, because it is specifically said by Krishna Das Kaviraj that this is the will of providence. What is the reason of all this splitting and sub-splitting and, you know, all these different things? It's daiva, providence. It's inevitable. We should not be naive and think, you know, we're exception to the rule. No. Providence is there for us and for everyone else. And it basically means that we will be tested, because this is the way to test our loyalty, our understanding, our intelligence, after all. And therefore, it is important to understand the workings behind all this will of providence, behind all these events which inevitably take place in any religious movement. So first of all, I wanted to start with the explanation of this phenomenon which is given by Krishna himself in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Krishna himself explains to Uddhava how it happens, and what is the dynamic behind it. Uddhava, after hearing explanation of Bhakti Yoga and glorification of Bhakti Yoga, that Bhakti Yoga is the main process, asks a very important question, which all of us have to understand, the answer we have to know very clearly. If Bhakti Yoga is the path, if Bhakti Yoga is the way to go, if this is the main process which is propagated by the Vedas, if this is the only way to achieve the complete knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why the hell there are so many other processes? Why there are so many mantras, so many rituals, so many this and that? And, you know, in every religion it's there, but in Hinduism, my God, you know, it's totally, completely incomprehensible event if you see from the outside. And Uddhava, he's asking, if everything is so simple, why it is so complicated in reality? If it is how you say, it's so clear, you explain this. If you say that, you know, Vedasya Sarvaraham, all the Vedas are only to understand me, why there are so many other stuff is there? So he asked this question, and Krishna starts explaining this. I will read a few verses from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, from the 14th chapter, which is called Lord Krishna Explains the Yoga System. How Lord Krishna is explaining this process to Uddhava. He says in the verse number 3, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, by the influence of time, the transcendental sound of Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma, because I myself am the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas. First of all, Krishna starts by repeating the same principle, that Vedas, the scriptures, are not different from him. He is one with the Vedic sound. And ultimately, it means that all Vedic sound, all Vedic scriptures are to understand him and to approach him, to come closer to him. So he says, he again confirms the same truth. Yes, Vedaisya Sarvairahama Vavidya, all Vedas are to understand me, and this is how it is, by absorbing this sound, by relating to this sound and studying this sound and listening to this sound, ultimately we will come closer to Krishna. But then immediately after that, Krishna starts saying how this process of splitting and divergence is taking place. Lord Brahma, Who is the perfect recipient of this original Vedic sound coming from the original source, non-different from original source? Lord Brahma spoke this Vedic knowledge to his eldest son Manu and the seven great sages headed by Bhrigu Muni, then accepted the same knowledge from Manu. So the first three generations of religious movements are there. Original sound, Lord Brahma is the first generation, he is the founder. He transmits it further to Manu, and Manu transmits it to the seven sages. And then very interesting process starts. From the forefathers headed by Bhrigu Muni and other sons of Brahma appeared many children and descendants who assumed different forms as demigods, demons, human beings, Guhyakas, Siddhas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Charanas, Kimdevas, Kinnaras, Nagas, Kimpurushas, and so on. All of the many universal species, along with their respective leaders, appeared with different natures and desires generated from the three modes of material nature. Therefore, because of different characteristics of the living entities within the universe, there are a great variety, the great many Vedic rituals, mantras, and rewards. So, basically, there are a couple more verses which I will read. Basically, Krishna himself says that this original Vedic sound was given to Brahma, then to Manu, and then to seven sages. But even on the level of the seven sages, there are different opinions, different understandings. And from these seven sages are different forms of living entities appeared, but these forms of living entities is nothing but the forms of their understanding of the original sound. Because ultimately, the different forms and different species of life is a manifestation of different minds. And all these Guhyakas and Charanas and Gandharvas and this and that, ultimately you may say that this is different ways of understanding the original sound, which they will interpret in their different ways, and they will establish different schools and different paramparas and disciplic successions and so on and so forth. And then Krishna continues, thus due to the great variety of desires and natures among human beings, there are many different theistic philosophies of life which are handed down through tradition, custom, and disciplic succession. There are other teachers who directly support atheistic viewpoints. It's also very remarkable because here Krishna says that ultimately even the atheistic philosophies are originally coming from him. Through this process of perversion or imperfect reflections in the minds or in the mirrors of desires which are there in different species of life through the original seven sages. And then the last verse which I wanted to read. O best among men, the intelligence of human being is bewildered by my illusory potency. And thus, according to their own activities and whims, they speak in innumerable ways about what is actually good for people. In other words, Krishna here says that everyone, whoever is preaching here, whoever is teaching, whoever is propagating certain views, ultimately they want to bring something good to people. You know, even if it's atheists, some, you know, what's his name? Dawkins? Or, you know, this famous guy who said that there's no God. He wants good for people. That's, God forbid, Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai. Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. So, ultimately, that's because of their understanding. There are certain leaders of the society, and these certain leaders of the society who are taking care of their particular followers, they want to bring them good, and therefore, and only because of this, they propagate their views. They sincerely believe that this is the best way to live. And this is the best process to follow, and this is the best mantra to chant, and this is the best ritual which we should do, and this is the best lifestyle. So, in one sense, Krishna is establishing total, complete pluralism here, and he says, yeah, right, it's going on. Krishna is used to it because he's seeing how it goes on. But it doesn't mean, again, it doesn't mean that everyone is equal and everything is equally correct and there is no right path. Because from the very beginning, Krishna said, yes, there is right path. And the very question of Uddhava which sparked this conversation or these answers was, please explain to me why, if there is one path, why there are so many different things. So, even though this process is natural and it will go on, it actually kind of establishes, or not establishes, but basically it's there for us to, first of all, to test our sincerity. And we have to be very clear how it's going on, and at the same time we have to understand how we should behave. Because there is a very strong cheating propensity in a human being. And this cheating propensity, when the intelligence becomes subservient to our desires, this is how the cheating propensity starts. We have desires, and there is an opinion which is coming down from above. And when this opinion is coming to our mind, it somehow or other mixes with our desires and then being transformed by our intelligence. By our very fruitful intelligence, we are trying to adjust their opinion to our desires. Basically, the very strong desire of every human being is that, you know, everyone wants to follow something. Everyone wants to know that he's saved. Everyone wants to follow the right path and whatever. But at the same time, everyone wants to fulfill his or her desires. So how to combine this? For that, the intelligence is given to us by God. And this intelligence is making magic. He takes the pure teaching and crossbreeds it with our desires. And the result of this crossbreeding, some ugly teaching, takes place, basically, appears in the world. This is how it is. This is how the truth is becoming, you know, taking all these shapes and forms and being propagated in a human society. So because of this cheating propensity, because of this propensity for our mind to somehow or other always adjust the truth towards our needs, to make the truth digestible and easily kind of, you know, pleasing to the heart. We all want truth, but we only want the pleasing truth. The truth which is kind of, you know, comfortable, sits comfortably within our heart. All these processes are taking place, and none of the religious movements is an exempt of these processes. So therefore, this Daivarakaran is there. That this is the the reason is the providence. It's inevitable, and basically it's testing our sincerity. All these processes are the test of our sincerity. How we should behave, what should be our attitude, and how much we should bend the truth to adjust it towards our understanding or towards our desires, which are usually not so pure. So, first I wanted to say, while explaining this process, I also wanted to say a little bit in general about this dynamic. This split or schism of a religious movement, which usually takes place very early in the history of religious movement. No matter which religion we take, whether it's Christian religion, Muslim religion, of course Hinduism is, it's difficult to say what Hinduism is and where it is. But if you take any other religion, you will see that usually the major split takes place very close to the beginning of a particular religious movement. And here we witness the same dynamic, because the sons of Advaita Acharya, they're sons of Advaita Acharya. And there were six of them, and three of them, as Prabhupada will explain later, became completely useless asara, and three of them followed the right opinion. So it was split in half. And again, as I said, it's amazing that they had the privilege to directly associate with Advaita Acharya. But still, despite of this fact, they split it. So usually this split, if we take Muslim religion, then the split also took place very early in the history of Muslim faith. And as we know, there are two main groups in Muslim religion, Shias and Sunnis. Sunnis is the majority, Shias are there, but still, you know, and it's in the very beginning. You know, if we take Christianity, then there is Orthodox branch and Catholic branch, which also took place quite early. But even before that, there was split. But anyway, we'll skip it. So, what I want to say is that this splitting tendency, or this original split, which is described in this particular pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita, usually takes place among the followers of the second generation. The first generation, in our case, was of course Panchatattva, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Advaita Acharya, Nityananda Prabhu, Gadadhar, and Srivas Pandit. They are, in our movement, the founders of our movement, with the particular roles and particular roles to play and particular, you know, understanding of their natures and their missions. And this is the first generation. And the crisis, the severe crisis of the second generation is usually inevitable, because all their followers, because usually all these people who establish religious movement, they are very strong themselves, and therefore their followers are very strong. Their followers also are very strong-minded people, because the strong leader generates strong leaders under himself. And because these strong leaders are being generated, when the founder disappears, which is inevitable in this material world, then the strong leaders, and strong leaders means strong heads, right? They are very strong-headed people, you know, very stubborn people. Usually, there is difference in opinion immediately after the founder. When the founder is there, it's very easy to resolve all these contradictions which may be there, because they just come to founder and ask, and he will say, that's it, that's how it is. But then immediately, as soon as he disappears, there are different opinions, and these different opinions usually In all religious movements, not only in this case, although in this case in particular, but in all the religious movements, over two issues. The two issues which create the split in the religious movements is the position of the founder, who is he, and what is his place. Like in this particular case, the sons of Advaita Acharya, they said, you know, our father is more important than Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that was the split. That was the splitting point. Three of the sons of Advaita Acharya, including his elder son, Achyutananda, they accepted Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Advaita Acharya, even though he is Acharya and he is the avatar, but still he is his servant. But then the other people, the other sons of Advaita Acharya, they decided that, you know, their father is more important than Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If we take Christianity, then in Christianity there was, I believe, around the period over 200 years where they were debating the position of Jesus Christ, trying to establish the position of Jesus Christ. And there were different opinions. Who is he? Whether he is God, whether he is Son of God, whether he is inconceivably one and different from God, or whether he is, you know, does he have a material body, or his body is spiritual, you know. They were trying to figure it out. So that's basically one of the main issues over which people will start arguing. Why it is so important? Because it establishes very many other things. As a consequence of this establishing how we follow, who is the supreme authority in this movement, whose word is the last here, and so many other issues are the consequences of this particular issue, the position of the founder. And then the second problem, which is usually a big, big, big problem, and the same actually in Muslim religion, the Shia and Sunni faith, they split it not because they argued about the position of Prophet Muhammad, but they argued about who is the successor, who is the right successor, which is almost the same thing. Because Srila Prabhupada, he gives the similar instance from the history of Gaudiya Math. And in the history of Gaudiya Math, yes, everyone accepted Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and his position, but then how to rule and who will be the next, who is the successor, that will be the splitting point, so to speak. So the first is the position of the founder and the way to succeed him. How to who is the right successor, who is the right follower, and how to follow him. This is the one issue which is usually a very troublesome issue for any religious organization. And the second issue is actually the what the founder was teaching. The first, most important, it's amazing how it works in human psychology. Most important, you know, who is he and what is his position? And second, you know, what he teaches. All the it should have been vice versa. It should have been that what he teaches. But usually in the minds of people, the most important, you know, his position. That's him. We're following him. What we follow, it's secondary, you know. The main thing is that we follow him. It's interesting also that Prophet Muhammad, once, during his lifetime, according to one hadith, he said that when I pass away, there will be 70 different groups which will follow my path. So all the followers, they became stunned, because when the founder is there, you usually don't think about these things. You know, so they asked, you know, so who will be the... Yeah, no. Then he said, and all of them, except for one, will go to hell. There will be 70 different groups, and all of them will go to hell, but one. And everyone became, you know, really stunned. You know, can you imagine if Prabhupada would say, "What God is saying?" You know, there will be 70 different branches of, and only one will go back to Godhead, and the rest will go to hell. So, and they asked, "Who will go to heaven, and who will go to hell?" And he gave a very interesting answer. He said, the one where I will be there will go to heaven. In other words, the one who will strictly follow me. But, you know, and, you know, all the different groups in Muslim religion still, you know, everyone believes that he's with them, not with anyone else, because nobody wants to go to hell. But they will have to, obviously, most of them. So, what is the judgment? How to judge? And that's a very interesting, and that's exactly what Prabhupada is explaining in this purport. In this purport, Prabhupada explains that we should definitely, you know, try to follow as sincerely as possible the original intention of the Acharya. And therefore, the second issue, which is very troublesome for any religious organization, is not only to codify the teachings, to kind of very firmly establish the teachings, to have it really, you know, paka, so to speak, that this is what the acharya or the founder wanted, but also to develop the rules of hermeneutics, right? Am I right? Hermeneutics. The rules of hermeneutics, in other words, how to understand what he wants to say. Because usually in any religious tradition, at least now we have vast body of Prabhupada said. You know, and everyone, every party quotes, Prabhupada said, we are the right ones. This is what Prabhupada said. So, basically, the success of religious movement is not only to codify or to establish the true teachings of an acharya and to have it very firmly, you know, written down and without any deviations, but also to establish the rules how to understand what is more important, what is less important, which instructions should be followed when. It's also, again, very interesting in case of Muslim religion, also very interesting and very instructive. In case of Muslim religion, Prophet Muhammad initially wanted to establish Quran as the most authoritative scripture, and therefore he prohibited to write down any stories about him. Because usually what we have the teachings in itself, which is usually a revelation, which is coming down through the acharya. And then we have his example. So he didn't want that his example would overshadow his original words, the words of revelation, the words of the scripture. And therefore he prohibited any stories of him being written, because he wanted to establish first and foremost the authority of his book, Quran. And therefore, one of the first caliphs, his successors, and immediately different versions of Quran appeared when he disappeared. So one of his Umar, I believe, he collected different versions of Quran and he burned all the false ones and said, this is the right one. And this way he established very clearly, this is the main book. In our case, we have the same dynamic because all these changes in Prabhupada's books, it's an issue. It's a very hot issue, and people are saying, you know, all these followers, they're distorting Prabhupada's words. Some people say this, and, you know, some people believe this, some people... And definitely there is a lot of conspiracy theories floating around, you know, why it is, how it is. So, actually, this is the mission, very strong mission of the second generation of the followers of an Acharya to do these two things, to establish the position for the posterity of the founder. And that's what has been done by Ravindra Swarup's work when he wrote this book. And it's basically a very fundamental achievement. Because this is the book which establishes the position of Srila Prabhupada and in this way gives the stability to the movement. Because if this issue is not resolved, it will be inevitably a question of dissension over the time. And the second one is to codify the teachings. And not only, as I said, to codify the teachings or to establish, and like recently we spoke with Dravida Prabhu, and Dravida Prabhu is working on Prabhupada's books, and he said, yes, we want to make the kind of, to seal Prabhupada's teachings, no more changes. Yeah, they're doing changes because, we know, because of the nature of Prabhupada's books, he was dictating, and sometimes the transcriber didn't understand what is there, or sometimes so many other things which may be there. But that's what they want to do. They want to draw the line and say, no more changes. That's it. That's the teaching which is intact for the rest of, you know, for all the generations in the future, which, again, is very important. But, as I said, the rules of hermeneutics should also be established. And for that, very important is Prabhupada's example. As I said, even though originally Prophet Muhammad himself said, no stories about myself. In the second generation, people said, no, let's write down some stories because otherwise we will be in trouble. And they started noting down different stories because in these stories he explains how to apply the teachings. The teachings is there, but then you need an example how to practically apply the teachings. And in their tradition, this is the separate sort of tradition, Muslim version of Prabhupada said, you know, like we have, even during Prabhupada's time, Prabhupada himself was wondering, you know, he once said to Nanda Kumar, they say, Prabhupada said, and many times I hear it for the first time, and Prabhupada said, that's how it works, you know. Somebody comes and he is empowered, representative of God, he speaks, and you know, all the people immediately start misusing his authority, immediately starts adding you know, authority to his authority to establish their own authority. They want to establish something, they want to establish some opinion, and how to do this in a religious movement, Prabhupada said. It's not I'm saying, and who knows whether he said it or not. therefore, in the Muslim tradition, they established this, and of course we know in Christian tradition there is this gospel, and gospel is basically the stories about Jesus Christ. And again, they were written late, and in the Muslim tradition, they distinguish. The three kinds of stories about the Prophet. The most authoritative, medium authoritative, and less authoritative. Not authoritative at all, but still it's there. You know, so I think at one point we will also have to say that there are different Prabhupada said, you know, that there are some Prabhupada said which are definitely authoritative, it definitely happened because, and they established the rule how to establish it. You know, who is the most reliable, who is the most honest among the followers, who is less, you know, selfish, because the selfishness is what corrupts the original teaching, what distorts the original teachings and makes the distortion going on. So, basically, this is the mission of the second generation, to establish very firmly at least these two things: the position of the acharya, the way of succession. This is the third thing, actually, which should be done, which is quite successfully is established now in ISKCON with GBC and Ultimate Managing Authority and everything. So the way of succession, and the position of the founder, and the codification of his teachings. But then there is a lot more to say what should be done next, because this is not all. There are so many other things which should be done while, you know, to establish the religious movement and to firmly establish it in this material world. I'm speaking about this because I'm planning to give some presentation on this topic during the upcoming ILS meeting, where I will speak in more details about this dynamic, how it goes on. It's actually one Russian devotee, he made a very interesting research on this topic, and he found that basically there are similar patterns in many different religions, and they all have to face the same problems, but they resolve the problems differently, and the way they resolve the problems actually define the future of the religious organization, how successfully they resolve inevitable problems which are there is actually very crucial for the whole future. But coming a little back, and if we look for example in our closer tradition to ours, for example Madhvacharya's tradition, it's also very interesting how they dealt with it and how it was. There was this Madhvacharya, as we know, he was Mukhya Pran, one of the avatar or manifestation of Mukhya Pran, Hanuman, Bhima, and Madhvacharya. But then during his life, not everyone accepted this. It's interesting how they dealt with the position of the founder in Madhva Sampradaya. So what happened in their line, not all the followers really believed this, whether Madhvacharya is the manifestation of Mukhya Pran. So one of his last disciples, very illustrious and prominent disciple, Trivikram Pandit Acharya, there is a recorded story that once Madhvacharya was doing puja behind the closed doors to Udupi Krishna. And usually there is a certain ritual when the puja was supposed to be over after some time, and the followers, they are not allowed inside, and they are not allowed to see what is going on inside behind the closed doors. But usually it has a specific time frame, and they were waiting there. They were reciting certain stutis. I think they were reciting this Dvadasha Stotra by Madhvacharya, and usually by the time they would recite the whole stotra, the puja would be finished. But this time, they recited the whole stotra, and nothing happened. So they recited it again, and again nothing happened. The doors remained closed. So ultimately, Trivikram Pandit Acharya, who was very close to Madhvacharya, although he was one of the last disciples of him, he kind of opened the door to see what's going on. And to his surprise, he saw not only Madhvacharya serving Udupi Krishna, he saw Hanuman serving Ram, he saw Bhima serving Krishna, himself, and he saw Madhvacharya serving Vyasadev. All six were there. From Uddhava Krishna, there were three manifestations of Krishna, including Vyasadev, and from Madhvacharya, the three servants of this particular incarnation were there, and he was completely stunned. And he immediately closed the door and he composed the Harivayu Stuti, which is very famous among the followers of Madhvacharya. And this Harivayu Stuti, actually all the followers of Madhvacharya are supposed to chant and recite this Harivayu Stuti every day. Because this is the stuti which establishes the position of Madhvacharya. This is the point which I am trying to make, how important it is to establish the position of the acharya and very firmly, because this is the foundation of religious movement. And of course, Prabhupada here, he says that people, they failed to do this in Gaudiya Math. And the indication which he gives how to make sure that we are following the intention, the original intention of Acharya, the original opinion of Acharya. The test for this, he quotes this, Yasyadeve Parabhaktirya Tadeve Tathaguru Tasyaita Kathita Yartha. He says basically what he says that the test is, the external test is success. If the original Acharya wanted this movement to spread all over the world, so Falena Parichete, if it's spreading, it means the following is there. He says Gaudiya Math became asara because they cannot preach. Why? He is establishing the bona fideness, so to speak, of ISKCON by which criteria? Because we're doing what Sri Chaitanya, what Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur Prabhupada wanted to do. And in our case, if we take notorious Ritviks, who claim to be the very staunch followers of Prabhupada, my simple question to them, if you're such a staunch follower of Prabhupada, why you don't preach? Why you only fight with ISKCON? Just preach. There are so many things. Do Harinam, distribute books. No. This ISKCON will do. We will fight with ISKCON. And we will establish our matter, our opinion over this. This is ridiculous. This is self-defeating. This is exactly what Prabhupada says. The original idea of Prabhupada was not to establish, his position the way they want to establish. We also want to establish Prabhupada's position very firmly, but we also want to fulfill his mission. And that's basically what Prabhupada is explaining here. We have to really understand the teachings of Acharya, but not only the teachings of Acharya, but also his innermost desire. And that's exactly what Narottam Das Thakur is explaining in this famous verse of his pranam mantra to Srila Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale. I'm the follower of Rupa. And that's exactly actually some reflection of the debates which were there in Gaudiya Sampradaya in the beginning. Because not everyone accepted Rupa Goswami. There were so many followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who didn't accept the opinion of Rupa Goswami. And Narottam Das Thakur in this pranam mantra, he explains that Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale. I'm the follower of Rupa Goswami. Why? Because he established Manobishtam, the innermost desire of the heart of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this earth. And he understood his intention, his opinion, and he's following this, and therefore I'm his follower. And in our case, we also, if we want to prove that we are the followers of Srila Prabhupada, we have to really try to understand his mood and his intention, his desire, and follow his desire. Not only his teachings, but also the way he wants us to behave and interact with the world and live in this world, basically. There are so many other things which could be said about the details of this Gaudiya Math split and other juicy details, but I'm sure some other people will fill you up with this while reading this story. But I just thought of explaining this initial sort of dynamic and why it is so important to understand the mechanism of split. Thank you very much. Any questions?